Hello, Doug.
Hello, Hollis. How are you?
I'm well, sir. Thank you for being persistent. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah, this is our second month of Podbean, and some guests get it, some guests don't. So you're doing great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, your voice sounds good. Everything sounds good. We're about 2 minutes before we go live. I'm going to put you back on mute. And then before I unmute you, I'm going to introduce you, and then we'll go from there, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks, sir.
Welcome to the Hollis Chapin Show, the podcast that brings you the most inspiring and thought-provoking conversations each and every week. I'm your host, Hollis Chapin, and I am thrilled to have you join us on this exhilarating journey. On this show, we delve into the minds of visionaries, change makers, and trailblazers from all walks of life, from authors, entrepreneurs to athletes, artists, activists, and even astronauts. We leave no stone unturned in our quest to inspire and empower our listeners. Our guests are not just your average run-of-the-mill celebrities. They're individuals who have overcome the odds, shattered barriers, and achieved phenomenal success. They share their secrets, successes, and even their failures, so you can learn from their journeys and apply their wisdom to your own life. Whether we're diving into personal development, authors, new novels, entrepreneurship, mental health, social justice, or the latest scientific breakthroughs, our discussions are always thought-provoking, challenging conventional wisdom, and pushing the boundaries of what's possible. But it's not just the guests that make this show special, it's you, the listeners. Your engagement, questions, and comments fuel every episode. We live for the ha moments, the goosebumps, and the inspiring breakthroughs that happen when we come together as a community. So grab your headphones, get ready for a mind-expanding experience, because on the Hollis Chapin Show, we believe that everyone has a story worth telling and a dream worth pursuing. Our mission is to inspire you to take that first step towards your own greatness. Mark your calendar, set your alarm, because every Tuesday and Friday a new episode drops, ready to empower, educate, and entertain you. Join us on this magnificent adventure, and together, let's unlock our limitless potential. Welcome to the Hollis Chapin Show.
Hello, and welcome to the Hollis Chapin Show. I am Hollis. We have a special, special guest here today. We have an outstanding show for you today. You know, our guest is a dedicated true crime author known for his hands-on investigating approach. And we'll ask him about that, hands-on. What does he actually do? Because true crime is great. Does it get down and dirty? Does it really get into the stories? We'll ask him about that. He has an English major from UC Berkeley, a very smart guy. My guest honed his writing skills under novelist and professor Leonard Michaels. Without further ado, let's welcome to the show our special guest, Mr. Doug Kyrie.
It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you so much for joining us, sir. I appreciate it. You know, I was talking to you earlier, and we had some platform issues with Podbean and stuff like that. Well, guess what? The big boy out there has a big problem. Because I always kind of promote the show on Facebook. Facebook is down. It's been down for like a couple hours. So it happens to the big boys, happens to the small guy. But you're here, and we thank you for being here, and very excited about you sharing with us your writing of true crimes. So before we get started, please tell us more about yourself and your new book.
Well, don't hold it against me, Hollis, but in addition to being an English major from UC Berkeley, I'm a lawyer who's had a long career. I was a trial lawyer and then went out in-house at a tech company. So my day job is working in technology, but true crime is more than a hobby. It has become a real passion. I spend virtually all of my waking hours and even hours when I should be sleeping outside of the office and sometimes, honestly, inside the office, focusing on true crime writing and journalism. It means a lot to me, and I've been doing this now steadily since 2014. So 10 years now I've devoted myself to writing about law and true crime.
Doug, what drew you to true crime? And was there something in your family, something that you saw as a lawyer said, okay, let me really deep dive into this? What kind of pulled you in to true crimes?
Well, law-related subjects have always been of interest to me, and I've written various law-related articles. But actually what drew me into true crime was this case, the case, the Berman murders, that's the subject of my first book. It will be 10 years ago in May that I began working on the project. And as I worked on it off and on for so many years, I worked on a number of other cases, published articles, and did deep diving into different investigations. Right now, for example, Hollis, I'm hard at work on my second book. But really, it was the Berman case that got me going. And the reason I got into that case was less to do about the crime itself and more to do about where it occurred. It occurred in a remarkable and remote location of the California desert that I'd been visiting for years and that meant a lot to me. And this unsolved double murder always gnawed at me. And 10 years ago, I just decided I'm going to dig in and see if I can find out more about what happened. One thing led to another, and now today actually is the release date of my book, The Berman Murders.
Yeah, congratulations for getting that all done, and you're releasing your new book, your first book. That's outstanding. Kind of give us a little bit more information about how Doug researched your research process. How do you go by it? I mean, to me, I do a lot of research with my guests through the internet and all kinds of good stuff like that. How does Doug do your research to get your stories?
Well, in the case of the Berman murders, I can use that as an example. Really, it started with one phone call to an extraordinary guy, a guy named Morgan Irby, who had been a desert exploration and mountaineering partner of mine for many years. For example, we climbed Aconcagua in Argentina together. That's the highest mountain in the Western Hemisphere. And Morgan is a firefighter who is just kind of a wild man type. He's brilliant. He's incredibly courageous and strong in the outdoors. He's also a guy who can, off the top of his head, just quote Shakespeare, Arthur Miller, the Bible. And I called him first because he was very familiar with this area of the California desert called Saline Valley, a very remote and isolated area where the Bermans disappeared. And I said, Morgan, what do you remember about this case? And he told me what he recalled, reminded me of visits that he and I took during that same time period when the Bermans were missing, and gave me some suggestions of who to call. And then Hollis, from there, one thing just leads to another. You know, when you interview somebody, you ask them who else might have information. And of course, as a lawyer, I use tools that I've become familiar with. For example, Public Records Act requests, internet research. I've got a good relationship with a fellow who's a retired FBI agent, a private investigator, and he gives me a discounted rate on locating people or pulling up background information. And, you know, you just chase every lead, you go down every rabbit hole, and you don't worry about whether the information is ultimately going to be relevant or not relevant to the case. You just learn as much as you possibly can about every subject that surrounds the case until you feel, okay, I've got this.
That's beautiful. Hey, you know, it goes back to the old saying too, is it's not really what you know, it's who you know and stuff like that. So just, you kind of put that point to it where who you know, pick up the phone, give this person a call, give that person a call. And I really try a lot to learn and know a lot of people where I can pick up the phone, do my research on Doug, do my research on the book, stuff like that. So that's a good thing to have, right? Who you know. Is that correct?
Well, it is very important who you know, but I'm also not afraid, Hollis, to just pick up the phone and cold call people. Yeah. What I've found is that if you're persistent, people will often talk to you. Sometimes they'll put you off at the beginning, so you just keep trying. Maybe you send them an update on what you've done so far, or you find out somebody who knows them and you ask that person to get in touch and put in a good word for you, whatever works. But digging in deep, one person connecting to another. And what I've found too, Hollis, is that you pick up steam over time. If you get into a particular area, for example, true crime, the more you publish, the more credible you come, the more likely people are to take your call. Or if they Google you, they realize, oh, this guy's the real deal, the more likely they are to cooperate. So it sort of builds on itself over time.
Beautiful. In your opinion, Doug, what sets your book, Bourbon Murders, apart from other true crime stories? Because there's a lot of true crime stories out there, but yours is outstanding. What sets yours apart?
There are two things that are defining regarding my brand, Hollis. One is the depth of research. There's a lot of true crime that is simply repackaging of what's already publicly available. There aren't a lot of true crime investigators and writers who go to the lengths that I do. And that means truly immersive research, to the point where, in connection with the Berman murders, I took several trips into this very remote area where they disappeared just to try 1986. But it took a lot of time and effort just to find the place where their bodies turned up. And when I did find it, Hollis, it was one of those aha moments, because not a thing had changed. You know, the desert can be timeless, and the scene matched exactly with the photos. But by the time I was there, you know, decades had passed, kind of a beautiful, lonely spot. It was hard to imagine that this was a crime scene. I ended up at one point lying down in the grave and looking up at the sky just to try to imagine what had occurred there. So that's an example of going maybe farther than other people would go. That's one thing that defines my brand. The other thing is I have a spare writing style. I leave some things to the reader's imagination. I write in a very spare kind of way, efficient words, clean. I want to tell the story in a manner that is very, very clean.
Still there, Doug?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. There you go. Sorry. It's technically wise. I'm not sure if I'm losing or not. Okay, so what I hear from you, though, to be a real research-heavy true crime person, you got to have some finances. You got to have a little bank behind you to do what you have to do. Or otherwise, yeah, you probably just sit at your computer and just research for your computer. Is that kind of true about it? You got to have some finances?
Well, it is true that I put money into this avocation, Hollis. I dedicate you know, my spare time and money to working on this. This is not a money-making proposition for me. It's kind of the opposite. Instead of golfing or doing whatever you might do, you know, if you're working hard and you have some free time and money, I put it into this avocation. The other thing is, I'm not afraid of fighting. I mean, give you an example. I went to a rural county in California and I wanted to get some old court records. And I was told, no, these are under seal. You know, they kind of blew me off, I felt, Hollis, and told me, well, no, to get access to these records, you would need a court order. So I said, okay. So I filed a lawsuit. I got a court order, and I think they were probably a little surprised. And I trumpeted this on my website and my Facebook page, not just to kind of brag about it, although I was proud of the accomplishment, but I wanted people in the future, if I'm, especially public agencies, if I'm asking them politely for something, I want them to know, if they do a little digging into who I am, that there is a bite to my bark, that I will call their bluff.
That's outstanding. And that's, you know, well said. We appreciate that, because like most people would, they would just back off and go, oh, I can't get it, this and that. Where some people probably just too lazy to go out there. The person you're talking to just didn't want to do it. And all of a sudden you brought back the paperwork saying, oh, okay, let me just go get this for you. But I could have done it in the first place. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. All right. What do you believe drives people's fascination with true crimes? I mean, because I'm on a lot of stuff on the older channels on TV, and there's true crimes all over the place, all kind of channels with true crimes. What's the attraction? Why people just want to see true crime?
Well, Hollis, that's a great question. And I don't claim to know all the answers. It's something I've thought about a lot myself. Listen, when I started 10 years ago working on the Berman murders, a book and project, and writing articles about the case, I did a cover story in LA Weekly. I don't remember true crime as being such a hot genre. It just so happened that my path in this genre kind of paralleled the growth of the genre itself. And as I got more into it, I realized, gosh, I'm not the only one. There are a lot of people focusing on this area. I have some thoughts about the human psychology behind this, but it's more just my pondering of why this genre, this focus has become so popular. Now, Hollis, I think it's because we live in a world now where there's a lot of things that are virtual or fake, or even reality TV isn't really real. But true crime involves elemental human drama, real people, ordinary people that get caught up as victims, as family members, as law enforcement, and drawn into these extraordinary situations. There is nothing fake about it. It is as real, as dramatic, as painful, and as all-consuming as anything you can imagine. And I think it touches into people's fears, into their desires to see justice accomplished, and again, a lot of elemental human emotions and drama. And I think that's why it's become so popular. It's very, very gripping.
Very good. Yeah. I mean, because out here in Tempe, Arizona, our local news, they just created a whole new segment, True Crimes. You know, they go back years and years and years and talk about stuff that happened years and years ago, but it's very popular. I mean, I watch it myself when I see it on. I would sit there and watch. I go, oh, that happened. Oh, that makes sense. You know, so yeah, it's very captivating. I mean, it keeps me watching for the whole hour it's on, you know, even though I wasn't even here when half of these crimes occurred. But it's good. It's very good.
Well, it does the same for me. And part of what I like when true crime cases are well presented is that they don't always have neat and clean beginnings and endings. You don't always know all the answers to the questions. They engage your intelligence. One thing I've noticed among my readers and among others who are drawn to true crime is these are thoughtful people who like being challenged, who can handle the complexities of real life, who want to help wood ending of your typical drama. They're okay with ambiguity. They're okay with unanswered questions. They want to know the reality. They want to be involved in something, even as a reader or a listener or a watcher, that is real life with all of the complexities and challenges that real life presents. And I think that speaks well of the people who are drawn to this genre, Hollis.
Very good. Hey, Doug, at this time, please tell us where do we go after the show to get your wonderful book and learn more about you?
Well, I appreciate the question. A good place to start would be my website, which is Doug Carey. It's just D-O-U-G. And then my last name, K-A-R-I, DougCarey.com. I'm on Facebook, DougCareyAuthor.com, and Instagram, at DougCareyAuthor.
The next question, how do you go about uncovering the motives behind the crimes you explore in your book? So you got an idea in your head, you want to put it all together. How does Doug start the process of uncovering things? And you've already gave us a taste because I know you, as I said, you like to get hands-on. So what other things do you do to really uncover some of the stories in your book?
So you ask about motive. I mean, that is a key element in any good and gripping true crime story. In the Berman murders, I grappled with the question of motive, as did law enforcement. But if you read the book, you'll see that the chief suspect, and by the way, he's never, this example of the ambiguity of real life, the chief suspect in the case was never arrested. He's never been charged. He is in prison on charges that are different and occurred later. But in the book, I suggest a possible motive type connection between the sex crimes that the very heinous and violent sex crimes that he committed later in life and what law enforcement theorized was a motive behind the Berman murders. But chasing motive, pursuing motive is a big part of what we do. And I think it's a big part of what draws people to the genre is understanding the criminal mindset and what would drive people to do some of these horrific things. A quick example, Hollis, the case I'm working on now involves the abduction, rape, and murder of a teenage girl in rural Nevada. She was just waiting in a Walmart parking lot to catch a shuttle bus to work when a guy forced his way into the car, drove her out to the desert to a pre-dug grave, raped her, murdered her, and then went home to his girlfriend as if nothing had happened. Hi, honey, I'm home. The man was 41 years old. He was a construction supervisor, well-regarded at work. He owned a $60,000 truck. This was not somebody, you know, that you might think of as being your conventional rapist and murderer. What?
That's unbelievable. Yeah. You know, I was going to ask you the insight.
That, right? And so. Say again, Hollis?
Yeah, now I'm losing it again. So I was going to say, what insights do you believe can be gained from understanding the psychology and, you know, of the perpetrators? I mean, again, how are you making any sense of this guy who, like you said, is well respected in the community? How do you get what's in his mind? You can never understand that. That's so strange. What are your thoughts about that? As you dig up more information about him, what are you coming to understand about his psychology of what he did?
It's incredibly complex, Hollis. That's why I'm transitioning from having written articles about the case to working on a book about the case, because it's a book-length project. And I won't claim to know all the answers, but I can point at some of the possible factors. They would include just plain genetics, but also include an enabling mother, an environment that where lawlessness was kind of part of the culture. In Northern California, at the time period he was growing up, there was a culture of secrecy that surrounded the pot farms, and there was a subculture of meth labs that had grown up sort of in this same area. And that was where he fit in. Even though he was a very young man, he was a low-level meth guy. And so he had a disregard for the law. He idolized some of the people who had achieved notoriety as lawbreakers, grew up in a household and in an environment where there were few boundaries. He then spent time in the California penal system, which is not a great place for a young man to kind of come of age. You put all these factors together and you start to see things that might have influenced him later in life to return to the deviant behavior that he had had as a young man. And when you have things like that underlying a person's persona, those can perhaps drive an outcome like this. But my God, how do you predict, you know, that a man who has actually turned his life around and is successful would then do something so horrific? I'll never be able to answer the question completely. If I do my job well, I might be able to point at some of the relevant factors.
That's outstanding. That's well said. And I appreciate that because, again, like, you know, you gave me some kind of clarity. That kind of makes sense. But like you said, you really can't go too deep because I just can't imagine myself hurting somebody like that, murdering somebody, and then just go home and like nothing ever happened. That just blows me away. That really does.
Yeah, well, it blows me away too. And that's what brought me to it.
Yeah.
Because you would never do anything like that. I would never do anything like that. Listen, I don't know you, but I assume, Hollis, that you've been perfect in your life. I've broken rules. I've made mistakes. But would I ever even remotely consider doing something like that? He fantasized. Pillars and talking about, oh, I would do it differently. And then when he kidnapped the girl, this was not a quick thing. He drove in a car with her for at least an hour, probably longer. Can you imagine sitting in a car next to another human being and you're a middle-aged man? And this human being is a little girl. Wouldn't every fiber of your instinct call out to you to want to protect her and take care of her? I mean, I've got a daughter and I just naturally feel protective about younger women. You know, they remind me of my daughter. Why didn't he feel the same way? He had stepkids that he wanted to protect. Why didn't he feel the same way about the girl he was about to rape and murder? How could he just turn her into an object for his sick fantasies? And where did those fantasies come from to begin with? These are questions that I'm exploring right now, and they keep me awake at night.
It does. I bet it does. Okay, so your book, Suburban Murders, what impact do true crime stories like your book have on society? Because what you're telling me for your future book, it's unbelievable. But when your book comes out, The Suburban Murders, what kind of impact you want to have on society? Do you want to sit back and think? Do you want to sit back and say, what do you want us as readers to get out of this book?
Interestingly, Hollis, the thing I think that motivates me the most is the support I get from the people who were close to the victims. In the case of the Berman murders, I have received such wonderful support from friends and from the sole surviving family member. And after the book came out, some of them wrote me notes that were just so fulfilling for me because it made it all worthwhile. So I think I look at it a little more narrowly in the sense that I'm hoping on some level to bring a measure of closure for people who were close to the case. And my hope is that more broadly, my readers can also share in this sense of closure and see that although justice may not completely be served in every instance, life isn't always neat and clean that way, that somehow we can process and resolve these horrific cases and hopefully learn something from them and come away as human beings who maybe understand more about the world that surrounds us, including the dark parts of that world that can seem unfathomable. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It really does. Hey, real quickly, what do you think about the new technology with helping with these crimes, the DNA testing, the AI stuff like that? What are your thoughts about this stuff today compared to years ago, helping with these crimes?
Well, I mean, DNA has just been a phenomenal breakthrough because it's allowed for the prosecution of so many unsolved crimes and allowed perpetrators to be located based on familial connections. I just think it's a wonderful tool. At the same time, Hollis, I think it's important that people not think that you're going to have absolute answers all the time. For example, in the Berman murders, there is no DNA evidence. That's part of the problem in the case. That's part of why there's never been a prosecution. What you have is a lot of circumstantial evidence, and that's important too. But those scientific tools are incredible and so important, not just for convicting criminals, but for clearing people who are innocent. It's been absolutely wonderful, incredible breakthrough. I haven't yet seen what the impact of AI will be, but my guess is, my supposition is that AI will enable information of different types to be drawn together and processed, and perhaps will reveal connections and linkages that will make, for example, serial killing cases easier to track and trace, perhaps by feeding data from disparate crime scenes across the country, we'll start to see connections, things like that. And so I'm looking forward to seeing where crime investigation goes using some of these tools.
Beautiful. Hey, Doug, before we get to the final comment, please tell us again, where do we go after the show, learn more about you and get your wonderful book?
Thank you. Please go to my website, Doug Carey, DougKarry.com, DougKarry.com, or my Facebook page, Doug Carey Author, or on Instagram, at Doug Carey Author. You'll see more about me, the cases that I work on, and of course, if you want to buy the book, there are opportunities to do so. I think there may even be a valid discount code still up there, but you better hurry because the book's about to be released.
Outstanding. Yeah, in closing, sir, can you kind of, you know, as you like, believe your book adds to a larger conversation? I mean, does it really add to it? Should we talk more? Should we watch TV and learn stuff that way about true crimes? As in closing, give us your closing comments about maybe us all having a larger conversation and solving these crimes and preventing these crimes. Because like you said, you got children. You don't want this to happen to a person like that.
I think that people who watch true crime for the right reasons, because they want to understand more, because perhaps they want to help protect their own families, and because they're interested in seeing how puzzles, real life puzzles like this, get solved and have massive impacts on the people involved. I think it's very involving, educational for folks like that. And there are also times in the true crime world, Hollis, where people can actually become part of the solution. That's another thing that makes it so wonderful. In unsolved cases, you never know where the information will come from. A final example, in the Berman murders, I wrote a cover story for LA Weekly that prompted the cellmate of the possible perpetrator to reach out with new information. So that's the kind of thing that can happen as true crime cases become publicized. People can reach out and provide leads to investigators, law enforcement, or a writer like me.
Outstanding. Doug, thank you so much for sharing with us today. We appreciate it. It was awesome. Good luck with your book. We're definitely going to promote you. We're going to put it out there for you. We also we stream on Amazon Fire TV and Roku, so we'll put some stuff on there for you too. Thank you so much. You have a great week. We'll talk to you real soon, sir.
My pleasure, Hollis. Thank you for having me on your show.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
What a great, great afternoon that was. Outstanding. Okay, guys, I'm not sure some of the static there in this thing. It might have been on my end. I'm not sure, but we'll check it out. But what a great, great conversation. Okay, the Berman murders. Make sure you check it out. Make sure it's going to be great. Not only you can just support his book, but you kind of get into the mindset of these people who are committing these crimes and how we can prevent this and what we can see. Because sometimes, like you said, these people who they're sitting in your room, they're sitting right next to you, they're on a bus with you, they're, you know, it's right there. Ordinary people, you just never know. But like Doug said, I mean, certain things in their life might have triggered this, you know, they put it together and stuff like that. So maybe make us can be aware. Maybe us can see that this could be a potential problem, you know? So just check it out, guys, okay? Hey, this is a great show. Make sure you follow up with Doug. Check out his book. He is on Facebook. He's on Instagram. He is on LinkedIn. The Berman Murders. Thanks for listening today. Let's play a little music. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We'll be back on Friday on the Hollis Chapman Show. As always, I'll see you.